our national championship's a major, so it does get them exposed to that high level competition, you know, early on before they break into that next level. But one thing I also want to mention is the camaraderie. You know, there's something to be said making a 30 footer for yourself, you know, for that last cash line. But there's something to be said for making that 30 footer when three of your other teammates are relying on you. And this is for your qualification bid to go to nationals. This is for you to spend a week in Marion, and you have to make that 30 footer. That's a lot, you know, that's another level of pressure there. In my opinion, you know, that brings another element in.
All right, we're back with another episode of Approachable. I'm Joe Henderson from Joe Henderson Disc Golf.
And I'm Paige Pierce. And today we have an episode I've been excited about for a long time. I've been very interested in the collegiate side of disc golf. And, you know, it's something where I went straight from amateur to pro, but I wish I would have known more about the collegiate side of disc golf. So we're going to have John Baker on today, who is the director of college disc golf, and he also is the director of the national championship. So I'm excited to talk to him about all things college disc golf. Joe, did you ever think about playing college?
Honestly,
like in college?
That is just not a thing here in Canada. So no, I didn't think about it. But the more that I hear about it, I'm like, why is that not a thing? Like, can you get scholarships? I want to know all the information. And I think it's such a cool way to enter the pro side of the sport. So I hope we can find out more information and he can let us know.
I have a feeling he's going to be the man to ask. Jonathan Poole with Innova Disc Golf, he has told us that John's been pretty much the one-man show for the last few years. So I'm excited to talk to the guy who can give us all the answers and get to know this side of the sport. So let's go ahead and bring him on.
We are with John Baker, Director of College Disc Golf and the National Championship. Hello, John. How are you?
Hey, Joe, thanks for having me on. I'm doing well.
That's great. We would like to start off with just like, tell us who you are, what you're all about, how you got into disc golf.
Wow. So I started playing disc golf in 2008 with my dad. We just did it as a bonding experience. And then from there, I continued into college, continued at competing as an athlete as long as I could, played on the college disc golf team there at Augusta University. Then when I graduated, I started working at the Hippodrome as an intern with Alan Kane and Pete May. And then from there, I just kept working with the college disc golf organization, ended up staying in Augusta for a while. The college disc golf organization kind of split off from the Hippodrome and the facility we were at. And then I tried to keep in touch with managing it and maintaining it as best I could. And eventually pitched it to Harold Duvall and Innova, and they took us on and really supported our efforts. So that's how I got to continue doing college disc golf. And now we've grown our organization to where we have more than 60 events a year. And we had more than 800 members last season for the college disc golf season.
That's
okay.
Incredible.
I feel very out of the loop because I thought you had the college championship and like that was the one and only, but not to say it wasn't big, but like that was the event, you know. I didn't realize you had 60 tournaments. That's amazing.
It kind of pains me a little bit that we don't do a better job telling our story, you know, Paige, and you're in the nitty gritty, you're there on tour, you know, and there's something that we need to do better to tell that story, because college disc golf not only has this big national championship to where we invite 600 players to come play at our, you know, our crowning event, we have all these qualifier events throughout the season. And this season, this structure is new for this season to where we have not just qualifying events, but we have lower level events. So these are grassroots, like league type play, introductory and inclusive events that then feed into our qualifier events, which are where teams earn their invite or bids to our national championship, which is the, you know, the title event.
That sounds like the perfect setup to go from one into the other. So even back it up a little bit before that, you said you played for Augusta. Was there a team already in place when you went there, or did you set that up yourself?
Yeah, there was definitely a team in place there. But like a lot of these teams that we see now, my team at the time didn't have official school funding or sponsorship. So we were kind of in this weird area to where we were competing as Augusta University, but technically we were breaking rules by doing that. So when I came on board, one of my big goals was getting us sanctioned and recognized by the school, which led to school funding, which led to us traveling to Tampa and St. Louis and Alabama. And we just really took advantage of that. And I didn't start the team by any means, but I helped us get that official club status and get access to funding, which was is a big game changer.
What are the steps you did to like get that access then?
There's an interesting story behind that. I can go into that if you'd like.
We would love that. Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. So our president got ill and I got control of the club and I said, all right, we need school funding. So I met with the student activities woman and I said, hey, what do we need to do? And she was like, oh, you can't do anything. You already are past the deadlines on all this these meetings and all this mandatory stuff. And I said, what? The national championship is like 10 miles from our campus. We have to be able to compete. And she said, oh, sorry, you can't. And I said, wow, that's not a satisfactory answer. I would just not take a no as an answer. I said, well, who's your supervisor? Who's your boss? Like, we're escalating this. We're going up the ladder. I'm not taking no for an answer. So she eventually relinquished that information. And I reached out to the school newspaper. I talked to some of the local businessmen in the area who had connections at Augusta. And I just tried to put as much pressure on her as I could to kind of allow us to compete. Well, about a week later, she got back to me and she said, hey, let's have another meeting. And so we went and had another meeting. She said, if you can complete the whole club chartering process in 2 days, I'll let you be an official club. And in my gut, I have to say, no way did she think we were going to do that. But we
she didn't know disc golfers.
Yeah, right? Yeah,
that's right.
Disc golfers will go out there and get it done.
Yeah.
That's well, right, good we job. Will. I mean, I'm proud of you for doing that and like not taking no for an answer. That's such an easy thing to do where someone tells you no and you don't want that confrontation or that tension and you just kind of like back off. But that's amazing. And I'm so happy for you that all worked out. What advice would you have if someone's just as passionate as you are? I can feel your passion through this interview. And like, I want to spread that. Like if someone is as passionate as you as growing their club, what is the first thing they should do? Go talk to their school counselor or like a sports department or something like that?
I really wish there was a one size fit all solution here. Yeah. And that's kind of the challenging part that we deal with because sometimes disc golf clubs are under sports clubs. Sometimes they're under regular club student activities offices. So really it's a unique university by university basis. We do have a starter guide on our website, collegediscgolf.com.
Oh, amazing.
Yep. Wow. And on the club's page, there's a 30-page guide there that really takes you through, you know, your first meeting to sample constitution, to a sample budget. And really, we try to, you know, help teams get that done. But really, when it comes to an interested student who wants to know how to start their team or get their team started, start a club, they really need to reach out to their student activities office. There are avenues to get this done. You know, there are established systems for them to follow. And if they just reach out to what other sports clubs or similar clubs are doing at their university, there's avenues established there to get school funding, to get jerseys, to get discs with their logo on it potentially. Wow. So yeah, there are a lot of opportunities there. It's just university by university type thing.
Amazing.
Very cool.
When you think about like going to like an NCAA basketball game, there's scouts there, you know, drafting for, you know, looking out for the Celtics and this and that. Are there scouts involved at the collegiate level of disc golf? Do you see that? Or sponsors, like maybe someone from Discraft or Innova or anything like that?
As far as scouting goes, I'm not aware of much of that. Like somebody go into, you know, AM Junior Worlds or something and see, or Junior Worlds and seeing the, you know, the up and coming players. But we're in a really interesting time right now in college disc golf because for the first time ever, we're seeing coaches, paid coaches, that their position at the university is all specifically disc golf related. So that change to athletic department funding and coaches, and we're also seeing scholarships. So what that means is the coaches get, essentially, they get to offer a discount on tuition, and that's a recruitment tool for them to use to gain enrollment for the university.
Cool.
So they can say, hey, come play disc golf. You know, the university gives them a scholarship and really that gets them an enrollment, a student to fill, you know, to get there and to pay to go to the school. So that's a great opportunity. And that's kind of a shift we're seeing in college disc golf right now for the first time ever, is that we love our student led clubs and those organizations and they're great. And that's what we're built on. But that shift to athletic department funding is going to be the elevating, you know, next level step for college disc golf, in my opinion, is to get that type of approach, which would include more sponsors. But yes, there are a lot of sponsors we see right now. Teams themselves are sponsored. Players are sponsored. Us as college disc golf, we have no requirements on sponsorship. So teams are able to do whatever they want and reach out to any manufacturers or anybody like that they'd like to.
And the sponsorships are like a Discraft and of companies inside the sport, or are those sponsorships outside of the sport, like Powerade, stuff like that? Are you getting any of those outside sponsors?
I wish we were breaking through on those outside sponsors, but I'm not aware of many right now. The cool thing is you named a lot of the largest manufacturers, you know, the ones that are nationwide brands. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing is when I think of like Ferris State, they're sponsored by the local shop, Great Lakes Discs there.
Okay.
So it's not only are they, you know, sponsored by the largest manufacturers, but they have like local support behind them.
Oh, that's
which
cool.
is super cool. Yeah.
And that kind of ties into collegiate atmosphere, right? Like you live in Alabama, you're an Alabama fan, you know, it's like mm-hmm. part of it, right? So that's cool to see that that translates into the sponsorships as well.
Love that. Are men and women's teams separate, or do they even have a women's side to the sport?
Our men's division, you know, I say that it with quotes, is a mixed division, you know, MA1, MPO, those are all mixed divisions for us. So for everyone really, but for us, if a female wants to compete on their D1 or D2 or D3 team, they can, but the female division is protected. You know, only females can compete in that division. Right. And we do offer a separate division, and that does not require qualification. So any team or individual that wants to come play at nationals can, and they don't have to qualify any individual female. So for all other divisions, D1, D2, and D3, it requires a 3-person team. So we don't even require the team for female competitors because, you know, we want to lower the amount of barriers as possible,
right.
To entry. Sense.
You said Division 1, 2, and 3. What are the differences between those?
For us, it's and a lot of club sports, it's like a division separator. That's really what it is.
Like one team's better. Like you're like, okay, these schools are really good. They're in Division 1.
Okay, so it's exactly. Like a skill level.
Okay.
Skill separator. Mm-hmm. And also if you're at NC State, for example, they'll have 5 different teams, you know, and you can only qualify one team in D1. So they can qualify a second team in D2 and then have a couple teams compete in D3 well, if they like. So it does give an opportunity for schools to field multiple teams.
Okay. Wow. So those 60 events throughout the year, those determine what division you're in, or like, is there an event like right at the start of the year that puts you in that division?
No, that's a really good question. So Division 1 and Division 2, typically you haven't had to qualify for Division 2, and that's kind of a new thing this year. So if you go to an event, they'll have an established amount of bids. So if you're in the Southeast, which is a very saturated area for us, those events are going to have more bids. If you're in the Northeast or somewhere like that, we look at the percentage of teams active in that area, and then we say if 10% of our teams are active in that area, they get 10% of bids. So each event has a different amount of bids, and each one of those events gives out D1 and D2 bids. So if teams play in a regional and they don't earn a D1 bid at an event, they can go and travel in another event. So essentially teams can play as many regionals as they'd like, but with a reduced number of regionals this year, that does make it a bit more challenging because I think there's only like 19 or 18 regionals on the schedule.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah. There's so much involved with it. Like, I mean, we actually had Ella Hansen on a previous episode, and we, you know, obviously we chatted a lot about ultimate disc golf, but we did get into her collegiate side of things. And it's cool to learn how much different the pro side of a sport is compared to the collegiate side. And like, you know, in the pro side, we talked a lot about how you're kind of your own boss. You make your own schedule, you determine your own practicing. But in college, like Ella was at least telling us through the ultimate side, that you have like a certain amount of practices per week. If you don't show up, you might not start that game. I mean, what are the practices like for the collegiate level of disc golf? It's still kind of an individual sport, correct? If your pro one player wins this, then pro two has a little less pressure. Is that kind of how it works?
Somewhat. So we do average, when it comes to singles, we average everyone's single scores towards the team score. So Your fourth person guy, you know, he might not have that much pressure as the number one guy or to perform well, but it still counts in the end. You know, we try to place value on every player, but when it comes to the practices compared to ultimate, you know, I wish we were organized as them, but that's the nature of the sport too. Yeah, we will get there. I love that confidence. That's the nature of the sport though. Disc golf is so individualistic.
Right.
You nailed it there. That mm-hmm. what we do is so different than what they experience when they're practicing for PDGA tournaments and things like that. So it's really we do see it's a different atmosphere completely. We've had players that have left and gone on the pro tour and traveled around and said, wow, this is totally different than collegiates. Uh-huh. You know, the atmosphere is just totally different. And I think you nailed it there. You are your own boss on tour. And at collegiates, you do have a coach telling you to do this, so your team leader, making sure you don't miss pictures and show up for your tea time, which still doesn't happen sometimes.
Say you're past your college days, say you're not as good as Paul Macbeth, but you have some desire to teach people and you're connected to a certain school. Maybe it's your alma mater and you want to go back and make them proud and show them disc golf. Like, how would one try to venture into that path and try to become a collegiate coach?
That's a really good question. We can assist in the way that we are looking for conference leaders. So that grassroots development that I mentioned, we are looking for active leaders that are wanting to promote the collegiate scene in their area. And what that means is we'll create a conference page for them. They're now empowered to reach out to universities to join their conference, to join their group. And what that means is that if somebody's interested in supporting a local college, we love that. And that's incredible. But that's one college. You know, if they're a conference leader for us, then they can essentially reach out to any interested colleges in their area and say, hey, you're interested in starting a team. This is what you do.
That's cool. I don't know if you know this about me, John, but I'm actually from Canada. So internationally, would any of this just transfer right over? Any of this information?
Perfect timing. Yes. We have our first Canadian teams coming. They're
Yay,
playing
that's great.
Right
okay.
now.
That's so yes, sweet.
It is sweet. Oh my gosh. We are so happy to welcome them. You know, I'm kind of conflicted. Are we now the international disc golf championship or, you know, like collegiate right? championship? I'm not sure.
Might have to but, change up that name.
but that's a great question. We have now a Canadian qualifier, Canadian regional happening. So okay. we are definitely welcome Canadian teams into our event. So please come on. It's been interesting. We've had other teams reach out to us from, you know, all across the world. And it's been pretty cool to see that growth. Yeah.
Any from Finland? I know Finland's huge in pro side of disc golf. I wonder about their colleges.
Yes. So not the colleges themselves specifically, but an organizer from Finland reached out to us and said, hey, we love what you're doing. Just to let you know, we're doing something like this in Finland. And of course, our reaction when we responded was, yes, figure out how we can get a team here and we will. So
cool.
Yes, yeah, that we have been reached out to.
That's awesome. So earlier you talked about how when you graduated, I think you said 2016 from Augusta, you got into trying to help them take over when it moved away from the Hippodrome. What's the name of the new course? I was just there at Jeremy Colling's wedding at the new, it's like Linville Falls Ball Golf Club or something, and turned into a disc golf course.
Yep, it was Linville, formerly Linville Falls, I believe, but now it's North Cove Leisure.
Yeah.
North Cove.
I mean, that property is insane. So cool.
It's so gorgeous. Like, it's picturesque. That's the verbiage I always use. We always say anywhere on that property, you can just turn and take a photo, and it could be your profile picture, your cover photo, or whatever it is. But they've been so receptive to our event, and there were two courses on the property the first year, and when we went back the second year, they expanded to three. And so now we're going to get to enjoy that third course again this year. In 2023. So I can't say enough about North Cove and the ownership and management there. They've been so welcoming and great. And I just can't say that I'm so happy. I can't say it enough. I'm so happy to see the DGPT go
yeah,
there next
totally.
Year. So that's exciting.
Totally.
News.
Yeah. yeah. And, you know, that's like something that I was wondering is like, sometimes the Junior World Championships will book a venue for like 3 years. Is that kind of similar to the collegiate, or now that you have Canadians and Finnish people, like, are you thinking about maybe moving around the national championship to different locations, or do you love that location and want to stick to the kind of like how Winthrop does it? It's like every single year the U.S. championship is at Winthrop.
You know, short answer, yes, we are considering moving nationals. We have nothing that says we have to be in Marion every year. There are no buts, you know, because everything we've experienced in Marion has been incredibly positive. And that, again, the facility is awesome. The people there are incredible. We are so very grateful to be in Marion. But our market is very saturated in that area, too. You know, a lot of our team development is in the Southeast, is in the North Carolina, South Carolina area. So when we look at that, it does make some sense for our organization to consider moving it. We've had discussions about that, but we haven't nailed anything down. So it's kind of hard for me to to speak on that, you know, beyond what we just, you know, tentatively, yes, we've had that discussion about moving it. When you talk about Winthrop, though, it also, I'm from Augusta, Georgia. And it makes me think about the Masters and the Augusta National, you know, and how having it here every year lets them prepare so well. And they have essentially the whole year to get it ready. And that's kind of, you know, we're going to miss that if we move it somewhere. Our staff, for us, when we've been at the Hippodrome and we were at the International Disc Golf Center one year, that allowed us to just be in our own backyard. Mm-hmm. So Marion's not that close, but when we consider moving it to somewhere like Oklahoma or Las Vegas or somewhere like that, that's a major undertaking.
For me, when I think about picking a location for a tournament, if I'm an unbiased tournament director, I don't want to give anyone the advantage of like home court advantage. So you kind of, I would think you kind of want to space it out and try different venues. But like Joe, I feel like you could relate to this a lot as someone who isn't always on tour. You're in Canada watching.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy watching when it's a new course, or do you like it when it's like, oh, it's Maple Hill time again? Like, you know, and you kind of feel like even though you haven't been there, you know it. Like, which one's more exciting?
I like the familiarity, I think. I like being able to see a hole and be like, oh yeah, I know that hole. Like, I know exactly what they're going to throw on that, or that's a sidearm hole, or like, you know which players are going to throw what. But yeah, for me, I think I like that familiarity, but it's just kind of what you know. But then with Portland Open, we actually had new courses the last 2 years. So like those have turned out really well. So it's hard to say.
It's fun to see new courses.
Yeah, it's fun to see new courses too. So
it's always something that we're talking about, you know, should we go back to the same places or should we move on and try some new places? I think whether it's collegiate or ultimate or disc golf or anything, like in disc sports, it's like, we talked about this actually in season one with UC and Simon on their episode. And we talked a lot about like where an ideal tournament would be. And just that, like, inside bigger cities seems like the best possible thing for growing the sport and, you know, just getting more eyes on it. So I think it's an interesting mix because you totally want that like familiarity, you want that wilderness aspect, but you want it to be somewhere where someone might stumble upon it. So,
and it's accessible. I'm always curious. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm always curious about that.
Yeah, those are great questions that we always try to consider as much as we can. And, you know, Marion being as beautiful it is, it has natural challenges. You know, it is slightly isolated, you know, so there are some challenges there. But it's funny to kind of hear you say some of the points that you use for your determination, because me, from a logistical standpoint, like some of the player focuses aren't necessarily the same as the TV focuses. So that was funny to hear that a little bit, because I'm thinking, you know, like logistically, what can we do? You know,
how much work is it going to be? Like all of that. But, volunteers, I'm sure that plays a big role into it too.
So that has a lot,
exactly.
to do with your location that you pick. You just said, how many teams can we fit? Like Joe and I were talking about this episode before, and like, how many teams are there? Like, how does this work? And so you kind of just teased it right there. So like, can you elaborate on, we talked about the qualifying, how many teams qualify and then how many play it, and how do you come up with that?
We analyze the schedule as much as we can and say, how many teams can we fit? And we try to fit as many as we can within reason. And then that's kind of the bids that we determine. And what that looks like this year is our 54 bids for D1. So those are 54 schools will be represented in D1. And then 54 schools will also get an invite to D2. And those can be schools that qualified for D1 or schools that didn't qualify for D2. Okay. And then D3 is open for everyone. And right now we're looking at our capacity is around 640 players. Wow. At Nationals.
This podcast is brought to you by Grip Equipment, the world's leading disc golf bag company. Since 2009, they've been at the forefront of creating the world's most comfortable, durable, and innovative bags on the market. Check out their wide variety of bags at grip-eq.com. All right, Paige, let the listeners know, why did you choose Grip Equipment as one of your main sponsors?
Well, first of all, I love the people behind the brand. They're very approachable. and they just always want to know how they can improve. For example, they turn the CS2 into the CX1 with bigger side pockets and water bottle holders, but also just the construction of the bag. It's a very high quality bag, in my opinion, the best quality on the market. The fabric, the foot rails on the bottom, it's just a very durable bag.
So whether you're looking for your first disc golf bag or you're wanting to upgrade your gear, head to grip-eq.com today to find the perfect bag for you.
So that's how many qualify and how many are playing, but how many do you have a statistic on how many different colleges actually have a team? Like maybe some have teams, but they don't want to play a tournament or like a club, you know?
Yes, that's a great question. That's very hard for us to track because at a certain point, when we mentioned how I'm going to keep going back to this conference model because it's so grassroots, it's so inclusive that we don't even want them to have a college disc golf membership or college disc golf page to play. You know, we want them to be, if they just got their team together yesterday, we want them to participate. So at that level, it's kind of hard for us to track. But once they get to the regional level, they do have to create a page with us. They have to reach out to us. And on our website, we're over 200 teams now that have reached out to us to create a team page for them. And we've only had this system since last season. So we've now exceeded 200 teams. Wow. Or 200 wow. schools, sorry.
That's yeah. a lot of schools.
Is that more than you thought, Joe?
Yeah. That's crazy. For me, I think Calgary Disc Golf is just now starting to get into the collegiate side. I think we have a team, I'm pretty sure. But like just. So like that just blows my mind.
Yeah, I mean, you see it like you're driving through town and you see it at a little middle school. You see one or two baskets, but thinking about there being 200 universities throughout the country that have disc golf teams is like super inspirational for me. And like, I don't know, my brain is just firing thinking about like how many players are on each team.
Oh, that's a really good question. So that gets philosophical too, because some of these teams will approach it like, we only need the minimum to compete. Oh. We want the four best players. And then other teams are like, I want to grow this huge club. I want to have 30 yeah. people. You know, I want to throw a cookout. I want it to be social. Okay. I don't want it to be hyper competitive. So it really changes. We know we see that there's a huge variance. Now, I'm not saying the teams that have 30 players aren't mm-hmm. hyper competitive. I'm not by any means. But, you know, it's really there's a huge variance. And I always try to support more towards the 30 player side, because the nature of collegiate athletics is a cyclical. Players graduate, you know, freshmen come in. So we want to build as strong foundation as we can. And I think that's why that development guide is so important for us, because when we steer the clubs to grow in the right way, they're more resistant to that cyclical nature. You know, they're not fading in and out as much. So yeah, as far as club sides, it varies all across the board.
But that's still a lot of people. And you said 200 schools, like even if they're on the lower end of that at four people, that's like 800 collegiate athletes mm-hmm. that are like in the know, they're playing disc golf at a college level competitively. They're one step away from joining the pro disc golf tour. And, you know, we talk about every week, if you watch the disc golf pro tour, you hear chatter of, you know, the new players. And this is where I think the new players are coming from, straight out of the college division. They've got that experience. They know how to be team players, but they also know how to put that to the side and shelf that and try to win their own match when the time comes to it. So mm-hmm. I think that is like, as a pro who wants the sport to grow and wants there to be more competition, that is like the most inspiring numbers that I've heard. It's like these people are committed to playing disc golf, and that's just so cool that we're one step away from having all these incredible athletes. Joe, you were curious about the scholarships and like...
Yeah. Is there money or like any way that you can get scholarships from disc golf?
Yes, college disc golf scholarships exist. One of the most recent ones that we had was Paul Uwabari came in and supported our national championship early this year and gave a scholarship to the winners of the men's D1 division as well as the females D1 division. He stepped up in a huge way and did that. In addition to that, though, not only Paul's foundation, but schools offer them as well. And if any interested person would like to reach out to us, we can put together a list and send that over to you. We do see scholarships coming out now, and that's a bigger part of that athletic department shift that we're seeing is scholarships start to become a reality.
That's amazing.
Is that recent, as of just like just these last few years as COVID happened, the growth of the sport kind of exploded? So was that just recently, or is that always been available?
Just a few years for a lot of the ones that we've seen come out of the woodworks. Leonard Johnson at Ferris State has been doing a great program there for a couple of years that I've been aware of. But as far as the, you know, besides naming the one or two off ones like Leonard's, that we really have not seen this like major, you know, huge growth, huge development outside of the last few years. It's really been the last few years change.
That's awesome that, you know, COVID, a lot of hard times came through it, but it's cool that we've talked about it quite a few times on this podcast, how it's helped the sport grow. And it's cool to see that in the collegiate side as well. And I just got to say, shout out to Yuli. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. I did not realize, I missed that he gave away two scholarships. So that is really cool. And huge props to Yuli. That's really cool. So since we're talking about pros, and we talked about Ella Hansen earlier, I know Robert Burridge was also a collegiate side, you know, superstar. But are there any other pros that our listeners might know of that were in collegiate, whether that be the national championship or not, just like involved with a disc golf team?
Yeah, there are quite a few names. I'm going to throw it back maybe with a Jared Rohn. I don't know how many of the listeners out there will remember.
Texas native.
I'm not sure what team he played on for collegiates. I was going to say Colorado or something, but I might have been
mistaken. No, I think you're right,
there.
Actually. I think he was a transplant, but he lived in North Texas for a bit, and I've played quite a few rounds with him.
More recently than that, James Proctor comes to mind. James Proctor was a champion for us. Raven Newsom also competed. Yes, he played for NC State. Also, I don't know if you've seen Chandler Kramer on tour tearing it up lately. He was a Texas player. He played for Texas A&M, I believe. So yeah, we've had quite a few players come through the ranks. Those are the biggest names really that come to mind. Sorry, anybody out there
Worry. I also know that Nate Sexton and Dave Felberg both have helped out with coaching on that side of things. So that's cool to throw their names in there too. Just like, it seems like everyone collectively wants to help the collegiate side of the sport grow.
Definitely. And what is the benefit to the former collegiate player to go pro?
Our national championship's a major. So it does get them exposed to that high level competition, you know, early on before they break into that next level. But one thing I also want to mention is the camaraderie. You know, there's something to be said making a 30 footer for yourself, you know, for that last cash line. But there's something to be said for making that 30 footer when three of your other teammates are relying on you. And this is for your qualification bid to go to nationals. This is for you to spend a week in Marion, and you have to make that 30 footer. That's a lot, you know, that's another level of pressure there, in my opinion. But so I think that even takes, you know, that brings another element.
Totally. My hands are sweating thinking about that. You know, like you walk up to a 30 footer for the win and you're like, okay, here we go. And you're just thinking about your capabilities, what it means for you, all that. But when you got, you know, like your friends are right behind you holding their breath, like, come on, come on, come on.
Please make it.
Oh my gosh. That is honestly like a priceless experience to have. Like you need to both feel those things and succeed in those things and fail in those things to learn and to become a better professional. And so that's really cool that they're gaining that experience before they even jump into that pro side.
Yeah. And then when they go on to the pro tour, it becomes this thing of like, hey, I've done this before. This is a walk in the park. Like, yeah, it's still difficult, but like you've done it before. You know how your body reacts to it. You know how your mind reacts to it. And you have all those things in place to help you out.
Totally. And you got Robert Burridge out there pushing Simon Lazotte multiple holes in a playoff.
He just showed it for sure this last year.
He's probably envisioning his teammates behind him like, come on, Robert.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, so good.
So something that I was super curious about when we started this conversation was drafts. You know, we had conversations about like how right now it's the off season, right? And you have all this conversation about pros. What company is this pro going to play for, blah, blah, blah. And we've talked about how cool it would be to have a draft and all the free agents are kind of in this draft. But I think that that's even more important to have for these collegiate players. And, you know, they have now, let's hypothetically say they have now graduated college and they're ready to move into the pro side. Has there been any discussion on that, or, you know, something that you've envisioned for that collegiate side of disc golf?
Wow. No, I honestly have to say we've never considered anything like that, but I absolutely love that idea. Man, I'm sitting here thinking like, okay, we require them to play at least 2 years in college before they can go play in the DGPT. just kidding. That sounds incredible. And you know, we would love to support any type of effort like that. And if that gets our players to the next level, that's something College Disc Golf would love to support.
Yeah, I mean, when you see it, like, you know, watching the NFL, our producer, shout out Andy, he loves the Bills, Buffalo Bills. But, you know, like when you're watching the start of a NFL game, it says, you know, Dak Prescott from Missouri. Now I'm just saying stuff. But, you know, it's like it tells you where they're from, and they have that pride, and they're shouting out their hometown, their former team. Yeah. And you know, I think that would be a cool element to have for disc golf, where you kind of give the recognition to where you came from and how you've learned all of those lessons. And then to also show your potential future sponsor that, hey, I was dedicated to this school and this program and all of these practices for 4+ years. And, you know, I'm willing to do the same for you on the pro side of things. I think that honestly, like, I don't know how far out that is in the future, but I think that's coming. And I think that will be such an exciting day to just watch the draft and to have fantasy disc golf, you know, like players out there having an app and talking about what college who's player going is going to go to. That's such a cool idea, I think.
And it grows the love of the beginning parts of the year for you, right? Like when you're sitting there watching the draft, I still remember my dad and my brothers would like sit around the TV like, oh, who's going where? Like, oh my gosh, they just bought this guy for this much. Or like, it gives you that like anticipation feeling of like, how is this year going to turn out? How is this going to go?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that brings up a good idea that Henry Childress had for us, which was a March Madness bracket.
Okay.
You know, we would love to do like a match play bracket style, something that would be really cool to get, you know, to get people invested in that side of things as well.
Yes.
Yeah, but I love the draft idea. That could be cool. Yeah.
So you just talked about there being like a March Madness bracket. So is that not how it works already in the national championships? Like you don't already have brackets? And how does that final event work? Is it like round robin style, single elimination? What's that format like?
It is all stroke play. So it consists of team play, which is 4-person alternating shot team
alternating
doubles.
Alternating shot.
And most of the...
Wow.
Yes. Wow. So you take the 4-person team, you split it into 2 pairs, one pair tees off, and then the other pair plays from the best shot. And then that alternates on every hole for who tees off first. So 4 people are playing for 1 team for 1 score. And on a tee pad, you'll have 2 teams. So that's 8 people on a tee pad at once playing for 2 scores against each other. And that's the team format.
And so is it more like tennis where it's quiet, or is it more like... Like, it's not like basketball where it's someone shooting a free throw and you can be in the background like.
No, we follow PDGA rules in our turn. So that would be a quick courtesy violation. Yeah. I'm sure the teams would be, you know, looking for that opportunity to give a stroke to their competition.
That's kind of what the vibe I get when I think about college. And honestly, I feel bad for saying that. It's very stereotypical, but you just think of college kids and their excitement and their joy for life and their competitiveness, you know? And so I think that's a really cool format. And like, you know, also the fact that it's alternating for 4 players, it really makes you have 4 strong team members. And I can see what you were saying earlier about some people say, oh, we're just going to have 4. Other people say, we're going to do 30. So if it is on the latter side of that, where they have like 30 players, how does a team like determine what 4 players are going to make it? Like, they have tryouts or like kind of rankings?
That's a really good question, because we've seen it done every way across the smorgasbord. Like when we consider it's, you mentioned a home field advantage earlier. It's funny you mentioned that, because our team took advantage of that for many, many years. The where the national championship was like 10 minutes from our campus. So for us, for tryouts, I said, I wanted them to play as many competitive rounds mm-hmm. as they could. So then I took their average of their scores. And I said, if you played more than 10 rounds, I'd drop 3 scores. If you played more than 20 rounds, we'd drop 6 scores. So your average would get better. So that's what I did to encourage participation. So that just shows how loose it is. We've seen voting formats. We've seen playoffs. We've seen them come to nationals and decide the day before the tournament with a little tournament at nationals to see who's going to play on the team.
Wow, a lot of pressure.
So.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Honestly, super cool that like individuality is still there and the creativity. And like one of my favorite things you said this entire podcast was you have forms like a template to take to your school and to do that, right? And so you have these documents in place that are well organized and documented, but you also have so many aspects of your sport that are so free thinking and still individualized, you know, of like how you pick your teammates and stuff like that. So I like the balance of that. That's really cool.
Yeah, it is cool. It's really unique what we see.
Yeah. And with those four people that are playing, I just wonder, like, the wait time in between your shots must be so long, like in between like number one and number four person. Because if it's alternating, right? Like, how do they stay in the moment?
That's a good question. That would be one of the bigger, you know, negatives that we hear about the format, is that there is a bit of time between shots and you're not necessarily staying as warm. But because it is doubles, you're only sitting out one shot. You know, your pair is alternating with another pair. So even if you're not driving, you're at least putting or throwing the approach shot or whatever it is. So you won't go an entire hole. Well, unless they ace, then you will. But you're usually right there playing with them. And when it comes to the team play, we do try to, it is double. So we take that in consideration. We say, hey, we're going to put you on the longer, harder course, par fours. You know, this is the doubles play. So it's time to, you know, make it a little more challenging.
We've covered so many things here today. And I feel like that we have so many more questions. Like, I mean, I'm going to take a deep dive on collegediscgolf.com because it seems like there's unlimited information. And especially with 200 different schools with clubs, like there's so many different variations to how things are ran. But I appreciate you giving us your expertise and your time and filling us in on a side of the sport that Joe and I haven't really ventured into too much. So I think I'm going to make it a point to get out to a college championship one time and watch, especially at the North Cove disc golf course. I love it out there, but maybe Joe, we could go next year and just cheer him on from the sidelines.
Let's do it. That sounds like a fun time. I'm into that. Anytime I can get to that area, I'm so down. I'm so okay with that.
Yeah. John, is there anything else that you would want to shout out or any tips for anyone getting involved, anything at all that you want to let our listeners know about before we log off here?
Yeah, just one quick thing. We talk about, you know, as a player at the highest level as you are, Paige, it's easy to focus on the high level competition and high performance. And we love supporting that. But what we also see come out of college disc golf is people who make disc golf their career and who grow professionally and personally through it. So anybody who's looking to, you know, get in a leadership role or travel or experience new things, you know, that these opportunities are there for the players who aren't necessarily at the highest level of the competition. You know, so I just want everyone to keep that in mind who's potentially listening, who might not be the highest skill level. You know, we still welcome you, and this is a great opportunity for you to learn, develop, and grow, and have lots of great experiences. And to finish it off, I just want to say we're very grateful to be on this podcast, and thank you all so much for hosting me and having me here, and we're just so grateful to have this opportunity.
Absolutely, John. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll catch you sometime soon out there on a course, John.
Thanks, y'all.
That was absolutely information overload. I'm sure we're all feeling it, but that was so interesting. Yeah. I loved the quote where he said, if they started their team yesterday, we would want them to be able to compete. How approachable is that?
Totally. That part actually gave me a little bit of the chills too. Yeah. Just like, he was so personable and joyful and just like, he's a perfect person to lead the college disc golf venture. You know, like he... went straight from competing himself to saying, hey, let me take over this. You heard him. He said, I'm not going to take no for an answer.
Yeah.
He said, this is not satisfactory.
Yeah, this is not satisfactory. I love that because, yeah, it just shows how passionate he is, and it shows that he's not willing to settle. And I feel like that's kind of how disc golfers are. We're like, we just grind until the end, and we try to make something of ourselves. And that's exactly, yeah, what he did with that.
Yeah, and just a good thing to remember and like just a good overall life lesson is like, if you want something, keep pushing, keep trying,
yeah.
Ask someone else, get a second opinion, you know, like there's going to be a way to get it done. Just continue to smile like John Baker and show that this is good. This is going to help a lot of people out. And again, I just wanted to give another shout out to Yuli. That's so cool. He's given away two scholarships, gotten involved with the collegiate side, Nate Sexton, Dave Felberg, all those pros that he talked about going from the college side into the pro side now. And they're all making a career out of this. And
getting recognized. They're doing really well as they do it too. Yeah,
absolutely. Robert Burge almost won a pro tour this year over Simon, who had definitely the best year of his career.
Yeah.
Four pro tours he won this year, and he barely squeaked out that one over Robert. So, I mean, it's really cool to see this stepping stone from college into the pro scene, and also to learn how other organizations within our sport operate. Because I think us as, yes, we're pros and they're college level, but we can still learn things from them and how they operate as a foundation. And I think there's so many good lessons in there, is including like what he was saying about the pressure and having your teammates behind you, like holding their breath, waiting for you to try to make that putt to go on to qualify. So
yeah, I know you and I have both felt that, like at a tournament where you're like looking to make a putt, and it can separate you from like first to second place, and it's just so much pressure. But imagine having those teammates behind you, like, oh man.
Totally. I really enjoyed listening to John and just like absorbing his joy. That was just a great conversation for me to feel re-energized and like determined to make some moves. And yeah, I'm very thankful for his time. So if you guys, seriously, if you do want to learn anything else about college disc golf, make sure you check out his website. There's lots more info out there. If you know anyone that's about to graduate high school, they play disc golf, any of your kids in your life, like make sure to hook them up with that website and at least have them read up about it. Do they want to try to go to college for disc golf? There are scholarships available and the information is out there. So thank you guys for tuning in and helping us grow the sport via education and disc golf.
Thank you, everyone. And you can always be sure to reach out to us on Instagram with any of your comments, questions, and concerns. We are at ApproachablePod on Instagram. And if you ever want to email us, you can also email us at approachable@jomezpro.com. And we can also catch up with you there. Thanks for tuning into Approachable, presented by Grip Equipment, empowered by Jomez Pro.